Welcome back, podcast number 38. Swanee just asked me that.
What's your name?
What's my name?
Yep. I'm Braden Anderson. That's Kelly Gal.
That was a tough question.
Yes.
Tricky.
I was trying to stump you.
That was my shirt. You know why I wore this shirt? Hey, I'm dashingly handsome in it. Mel says, baby, you look hot in that shirt. I said, okay, that's it. Never wearing another one again.
I put on a black shirt.
Single best fly line in history. So, huh?
I put on a black
shirt. Did you do that just to be like me?
No, I wanted to throw people off the scent that we're filming two episodes in the same night.
We are, aren't we?
Yeah, but
sometimes
if we change shirts,
sometimes
then
we
maybe
are.
They don't know.
So I wear the same one twice?
Yeah.
Three times. I might never take it off.
Ew.
Ego.
Ew, dude.
Ew. I wash mine, unlike Jerry.
Hey.
Woo.
Jerry, that's kind of a...
Fuzzy's over there.
He's going to come kick your ass again.
Sorry. Sorry.
All right. Wretched Mass Festival, August... Nope, September.
September.
5th and 6th. Saturday, we're doing a live podcast. Friday, Kelly's Time Flies. I said the dates or the times in the last episode. Friday, Kelly's Time from 2 to 3:30. Saturday, we're doing a live podcast from 12 to 1. It's a great time to get your questions off. Come meet us, whatever. Say hello.
Get your questions off.
Don't do this. Don't twist these words. I think that was fully above board and okay.
What does it mean?
Fucking pervert. All right. So we've got some questions we're going to get into today. But as is tradition, start off with what is Kelly pissed off about?
I just came back from the Bighorn, and there's a new, not really new, just, that was the first time I physically witnessed the daisy chaining of boats, and I'm not necessarily pissed, I'm a little confused of the river etiquette. I pride myself in being a very respectful guide. I don't cut people off, and I don't low-hole people, and I don't crowd people, and, you know. But I got there, and I had never witnessed, I mean, they were like, what was that, 3 miles? There was like 20 boats. Now, one of them was a group, so that wasn't fair, because that was a group of 10.
Yeah, we didn't know that for a while, though. Yeah.
We didn't know that in the
20
beginning.
20 boats within 200 yards of us.
Yeah, maybe, 24.
Yeah, maybe less.
No, 24 outside, the guys on the outside doing it. But it's not that I have, you know, if you want to do that circle jerk, that's cool, but they don't.
Will
they
you
take up
to our
less.
Listeners, what the circle jerk is?
I think most of them know.
In it's this just, sense,
as Jerry said, don't be the pivot man. but the it's a you're daisy chain, and you go up and you float down, and then you row back up, and then you float down and you row back up. Personally, I never had a client in 40 some years of guiding that would allow me to do the circle jerk, but it wasn't that. If that's what they do, that's what they do. Although I think they get really, arguably one of the top dry fly rivers in the history of the world. And to think that your game is to go around in a circle and run away from a bobber, not teach people to cast and do things, is rather sad to me. But it is. The only reason that it gets done is that people allow it. You know, the clients allow it. If you're happy running up and down, catching those fish over, it's great. But it's more the etiquette thing that I didn't know how to play the game. Because we locked up with Doc. And I saw a boat on a bend, very long. We were on the inside of a very long bend. And I wanted to go below him and fish that little island thing. But I sat up waiting because I thought, I don't want to go around and kind of, because it's kind of a pinch. It goes out pretty wide and it comes into the, back to that same bank, but there's an island that's kind of pushing you in.
There's kind of two funnels out of the bottom of it.
Yeah, but only one gets me where I want to go, and which is going to put me relatively close to that other boat.
Yeah, he's cutting the tail out there.
And he might be casting, you know, a dry fly out to these fish, little do I know. Dry flies are pretty non-existent, which is, I was talking to John, and I forgot John's last name. He's a great guy. He's a, And he says, you know, and Mike and I had the same conversation, and Doc, he says, you know, in the old days, we didn't fish from the boat unless we were throwing a streamer. And we went down, we got out and we weighed and we taught people how to, and he's still only, I think, I'll get your name, John, it pisses me off, I forget. But he's been guiding there for, you know, 30 years or whatever. And he says, you know, we never did that. We went down and we got out and we taught people how, and he's still to this day just dry flies and sight nymphs, right? And doesn't do this daisy chaining. But I got up behind this guy, and so, and I'm 50 yards above him. And I don't, because I want to come in, I know I'm going around that bend, and I know I'm going to pinch in right where he's, I have to, and I'd probably be where he might be fishing. Whether he's nymph fishing or dry fly fishing, doesn't matter. I don't want to crowd.
Sindland.
Huh?
Sindland.
Sindland, damn it.
You know, I found that?
Hmm.
Onyx.
Really?
I know where he lives.
Yeah. He said, what a great guy. And so, John Sindland. And so, his wife's adorable. One of the funniest people I've ever met. What might call it, Little Deb or something. Had a nickname. She was hilarious when she was waiting. Oh, God, she was funny. But anyway, the whole crew was. We stayed at the trout shop.
Yep.
And Hale and Steve and, God, it was great. It was like going to back in time. I mean, just hadn't seen those guys in 20 years. What a class act that place
Turned
is.
Out you knew every single person staying there, too.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. Fly shop
I saw
owners.
John and Amy Hazel. I saw Bo Bryan's.
Turns out there's some pretty fishy cats that stay at the trout shop.
Oh, yes. Oh, I see. Yeah. But I mean, what a really great... The lodge was... I hadn't been... I thought I'd been... I hadn't been to the Bighorn in 15, but I hadn't been back to there in 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, when I bought this, I kind of just stopped going over because I'd do this, but... Anyway, I was talking, John lives right next to it, and it was morning, and I'm out, and he's out walking his dogs around, we're talking, and he says, you know, we did not do that in the old days. We went down, we got out, we fished, and you learned how to set up and wade and do everything, you know, plant your casts and do everything you're going to do. And so Mike and I were talking it too, and I says, you know, when I rented, like my first couple years there renting boats, a lot of times I was by myself.
Yeah.
When I really thought about it until we were driving back, that, you know, like here, that'd be kind of a pain. You got to get out and it's fast in there. But there, I'd get out and I would fish 2-3 hours and come back to my boat. And then I'd row down and, you know, get to another, if I'm nymphing in the morning or if I'm, you know, waiting out a hatch or waiting for a pod or something like that. You know, I might anchor up in my boat and wait on it, but I, most of the time, you just got out and went to them.
Yeah, so it's a perfect river for that.
Oh, my God.
Long gravel bars.
Oh, Jesus.
It's never, so wadeable.
It's got to be one of the troutiest things on earth. But, I mean, and the ultimate learning tool. I mean, I've made jokes about that's where guides go to die because they go and they do that daisy chain bobber chase. And when you have the opportunity to go have a rebirth, and have be able to follow a hatch all through its entire sequence. That's what I said in a couple of videos about how Doc said, I asked Doc one time, what is your infatuation with the Bighorn? And he says, because what's supposed to work does. You get to follow, you know, the bugs start moving in the morning and they're a little more active and you can nymph them up and they start coming through. Now you get an emerging fly and you can run your emerger and you can do it however you want. If you want to swing and you want to, however, there's a million ways you can do it. Then you got your duns are all over. You get to fish dry flies and to pods of fish and to selective feeding fish. And then you get a spinnerfall that's going to come in from a different mayfly. And now you got a compound hatch or a compound setup of bugs. And then you got caddis everywhere. And now you got a few mahoganies and you're hoping the mahogany shows up and you got PMDs. And it's like, holy shit, how do you, then you get to dissect it all. And then 99.5% of the guys go by with a freaking double purdy rig. They don't even double purdy. They're like a sow bug.
Sow bug and a purdy gun.
Yeah. And it's like...
They're really getting fancy. They throw a blowtorch.
So yeah, so it's like the same mindless game of running the bot. But that's not mine to... That's not my... Everybody can do it if they want. I just thought it was tragic to have that absolute, the open slate, the biggest blackboard in the world that's just... You get to... And... Bobber chasing, man. But that's not what pissed me off. What pissed me off is I set up above the guy waiting for him to see what he was going to do. And I thought, well, he's set up, and I'm trying to, and so I decide, well, I've sat here for 20 minutes and trying to be very courteous, and all of a sudden, he rode back up to me.
Yeah.
Now I don't know what the hell to do. Who's got the right of way? Right? It's like, what? You're going back? Well, first of all, imagine doing that here. And so, impossible, but yeah, I thought.
What did John say? There's two people that can do it.
Yeah.
One of them's Johnny.
Yeah. So, but I'm thinking to myself, this is a whole new set of rules. Like if you pull in behind a daisy chain of people and they're, when do you say, this is your water? Because they're going backwards up where you were.
Yeah.
Do you go down and like pull in front of them and low hole them and knowing, thinking that they're all going to go backwards? Or do you join in the circle jerk and get in there right in the middle? Or do you, or if you want to fish right below them, if they're going to go backwards in the tail of the furthest boat downstream, and there's two or three of them, and they're going to hit the R button and go in reverse, is all the water below them free for me to low hole your ass? Or do you low hole them? Hey, son of a bitch. It's like, what? Thought you're going to go in reverse for the next 4 hours. And so that guy, I'm sitting there and all of a sudden I'm going to break anchor, and I break anchor. Now here he comes. I'm thinking, oh, he must be pissed off that I'm 50 yards from him. Can't see him really. He gets up and he's kind of, and I don't know where to go. I'm saying, remember, I says, I don't know what to do here.
Yeah.
Do I go out and around?
Doc,
and then
what
he just,
do I do?
He's just looking at me like I pissed in his Rice Krispies. It's like, what are you doing, you dumbass? And then I rode out and he rode right past where we were sitting. I was confused.
You ran right up the anchor line.
Maybe that's the bad thing. I don't care what, if that's how people want to fish and you got clients that'll let you do that circle jerk, good for you.
Yeah.
And I mean, Jesus, I mean, that's why I said that's where you go to die, not let your brain, what a fishery. I mean, it's got to be that and the Mo got, I mean, so much diversity and so much opportunity to learn everything on earth, and you chase a freaking short leashed bobber. How boring, but that's not what I'm pissed about. Pissed about I didn't know how to run my boat.
Yeah, that was...
I'm the most courteous... No, Johnny's the most courteous guy on the river. He'll set up and wait for you for 40 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And he'll... And so I'm trying to go around, and the guy gives me that skunk eye, because I'm going to go around, and he's still going upstream, so I don't know, is it proper to drop in below him? Because he's going to run 100 yards of water for 4 hours? Is there like a time chart or something? You clock in and say, you know, like the road, like in the Roadrunner and the sheepdog and the coyote, do you like punch the clock? I'm going to be circle jerking this thing for 40 minutes. All right. So you don't come near me. And then if I go below him, I pissed him off. But the really one that was confusing was when I saw that giant run of guys bobber fishing, and directly below them, there's two pods of fish with their heads up. Yes. So now you've got those fish, and they go down, and then they come back up. Well, where's low holing? Is there such a thing as low holing? Like, I want to go fish the dry fly fish, right? And they're running over the dry fly fish to bobber fish in the center.
Which is sacrilegious.
But that's their choice.
They have clients that are trying to make a living. I get that. You know, not everybody can fish dry flies.
They could if they'd teach them.
Right.
But that's not my, that again, it's not my, I'm not passing judgment on anybody. It's not my business. Don't give a shit what anybody in the world does. That doesn't affect me at all. What affects me is...
Unless you leave your shopping cart out.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, but if I drop in below you, I mean, someone say, how do you anticipate where does the circle jerk end?
No.
Right?
When
you run over three pods of fish in 40 yards, to drill back up to go through it again, when do you get to low hole and come in? Just because you want to stop there, but beware inside of them, I was very confused.
Yeah,
I really didn't.
I was very confused. I got kind of red in the face right when we took off from the 3 mile boat ramp. Because like you said, there's what, 24 boats in sight? And there had to be at least 10 that were cycling that run right below it. five on each side, doing their, there's double daisy chains.
That's,
what, is,
that's
what does Kelly do? Kelly turns around and he goes, what do I do? I said, fuck if I know. And so he goes right down the middle in between the fishing lines on both sides. And so there, on each side, there are two different guys that go, hey, Kelly, why aren't you throwing a streamer? Like, well, 89-year-old dry fly perfectionist Doc Ellis is in the front of the boat.
And if
Kelly's not fishing.
And if I was, wouldn't I be hitting your boat?
Yes.
Because everybody's inside, right?
Hey, when are you going to get the streamer out? Yeah. Sometime.
I was.
In dry fly river.
Yeah, well, but again, I don't care what they do. No. And I, you know, and
I was just laughing my ass off. I'm glad I had my hat down.
And
low.
Mike said a lot of them would come back, but yeah. That, when I grew up fishing there 40 some years ago, you could put eight shit. How many we'd have four or five guys in that at 3 mile. This Jerry's over there he's the corrector. He's making sure I don't say something wrong. But you could have four, five, six, eight guys there on that island section.
Yeah.
You could fish for 6 hours and never get in anybody's way.
Well, there's like 1,500 beautiful shelves in there.
Oh my God. Yeah. But not really water to float. It's like 18, 20 inches deep there. And I'm thinking, whew, but it's easy to, it's maybe not, yeah, I think maybe the easiest glide river in the world. For some reason, that where I want to set up in my boat and fish upstream from dry fly, I can turn my boat around and hit the oars twice. And it's almost like I have a hydraulic anchor, a hydro anchor. It just stops, it lets you. It's asking you to throw dry flies. Please throw dry flies. Push your oars like this and just sit there. 30 seconds later, you haven't moved. And the flow, it's flowing and the bugs are coming at you at a perfect speed. It's begging you. The river's screaming, fish a dry fly.
Yeah.
And it's like, and here I am.
Maybe the giant pods of fish up are screaming
well,
that
yeah,
too.
That might be part of it too. And so, but it's like the most user-friendly river in the world. I mean, it just... The Mo can be nice like that to you too.
Yeah.
But I don't, it's just something about so much of the Horn that sets so perfectly. And, but again, that's not my problem. My problem is I didn't know what there's, I know, and I've been rowing boats since, you know, the 70s. Everybody knew the rules, but their the rules didn't pertain to boats going upstream because you couldn't. You didn't. You don't. You know, if you go upstream, say, oh, did you leave something at the truck? No. You know?
Couldn't, didn't, don't.
Can't. And it's like, holy shit.
Won't.
So that's, I'm really pissed. I'm confused.
Yeah.
I just.
This could be a fun new segment. What's Kelly confused about?
Oh, shit. That's endless. Yeah. But it was funny because my buddy Richie Stroll, we have like cloned brains. And I kept saying to myself, what would Richie do? And he's the guy, you know, Richie's the guy had this in his newsletter, Chasing Shadows. If you see the big bald guy, he doesn't want to talk. I'm curious to see what Richie's going to write into Steelhead. But yeah, I think it's the first time in my life. I mean, when I started guiding, there weren't other guides.
Yeah.
I mean, there weren't other drift boat. Nobody had a drift boat in Michigan. I think Ray had one. And when I got my first one, it was a 13-foot pram. And Walt and John both, we all ran canoes back then. He said, it's too damn big. I mean, holy shit. It was a 13-foot Fishrite pram. Mm. Didn't take up much room, more room than the canoes did. But and so we all, the etiquette just came with, you know, there were so few of us, you went, would you like somebody to do that to you? No. So you just didn't do it. And if you did do it, somebody came down and stepped in your boat and explained it to you.
Sure,
and when Ray Schmidt steps in your boat, you go, Jesus. You're like, I understand, sir.
Big fella?
Ray? Oh, freaking giant. With a bad attitude. He's an angry kraut. He's just his whole life. And it was like... You know, I remember Ray turned around and gave me that skunk eye once. I think I dropped anchor for 20 minutes.
Wouldn't get downstream.
I was like, where's Jerry?
Jerry?
Good. Yeah, what am I confused about? That's a good one.
What's Kelly confused about?
Like people who drive little cars and pull trailers. In the car, remember that? What was that car? Was it a Kia?
Well, the big trailer and the wheels about that big around the trailer and it was doing this all the way back. You were sleeping.
Oh my God. We're just sure this girl. And we get there and there's this chick in this car and she's just white knuckling the freaking. And there was no wind. We're outside of Livingston.
It was like a U-Haul or something?
No. It was a trailer, but tiny little wheel, old one, right? But it's way too big for a freaking car to be pulling, especially whatever that piss Aunt Rice burner she was in was. And she's like this, and the wind was, it was like a 4-knot wind, if that. Shit, that flat's usually 60. She'd have been out tumbling like a tumbleweed. Oh, yeah. And she's just like, ooh, like this. And she can't get that thing over 50. I'm like, that's interesting. That pissed me. Doesn't piss me off. No, it confuses me. Especially once she gets up here and then she starts going up in passes. I don't know if she's going to have to get out and kick, get that thing up the hill.
I was confused. What Braden was confused about this week is that apparently I was barking in my sleep.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that, do we? First of all, people know we're sharing a room. Second of all, what was with that?
I don't know. I've never been more confused in my life.
There's only a few visions that come in my mind. We don't want to talk about them. But it was definitely barking.
Kelly said I barked 5 times in my sleep.
I'm like, the fuck? Get me up.
If you're a sleep doctor, call me. I got issues. Serious issues. Yeah, there are a lot of issues. That's one of them, though. Yeah.
I am. Ever seen a Caddyshack? Bark like a dog.
Plenty times. Yeah.
Funny stuff.
Squeal like a pig?
Mm-mm. Wrong movie. Yeah, bark like a dog. What's your name?
That's
Johnny will correct us.
That's the worst one.
Oh, yeah.
Squeal like a pig.
Being all right. Mean and not too far in between.
Let's do a question from C. Erickson. He really went on a comment rampage over the last few days. Most of them were pretty funny, but this one...
99% of our shit's funny and good.
Yeah, most of their great questions, great comments, very appreciative, really, they love what we do, which is really kind of everyone.
But I really dig the assholes,
and then
too.
Those are the ones that interest me.
Such low-hanging fruit.
Like the guy who's been calling me a homo for 6 weeks, maybe more than that. I think it's funny. All right, so...
I told you, I still think that's Johnny's uncle. Johnny said
no,
that.
No, Johnny he's totally bullshitting you. Here's a good thing to do.
You just
don't
hope.
Listen to Johnny. No matter what he says, don't believe him.
Especially if he's very straight-faced.
Yes. I'm trying to think of what he just said to me in the truck.
Johnny, the guy wrote in and he said that congratulations for, what was it, hiring the first openly trans or gay guy.
Yeah, he's inferring that I'm a gay transsexual.
Yeah, or something. And Johnny said, which, whatever, if you were good at your job, but you're not, so you'd probably get fired anyway. But Johnny says, that's my uncle. I still don't, I believed him. He goes, oh, yeah. And he says, and you said, why would he say that?
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, I went, there's no fucking way that's your uncle.
You said, why would he say something like that? He goes, he hates you. And he left it at that, and he walked away.
I remember this.
I was full in, bought it full. I can now.
I don't listen to a single. If Johnny has a straight face, don't trust what he says. He is unbelievably funny and, I don't know, quick. Yes, I am a.
So what did the guy ask?
If I was a transsexual.
Now, the question for God's sake.
He said, don't hear much mention of the $3 dip being fished for caddis nymphs. My understanding is it was developed for the Madison, been fishing serendipities on the Deschutes for 30 plus years. Super productive pattern that is durable and simple to tie, great for midge larva also. So my question to you, Kelly, is what does the $3 dip represent and should you ever leave home without it?
First of all, what did I do? I have some actual dips, and serendipities. Ross Marigold invented this fly, along with the Ram Caddis, which I thought I had sitting right here. I might have taken them home. But the original three dip was a caddis, right? Or serendipity, I mean. And I will show you some of the actual, there's actually rams and serendipities, and they were much bigger than these. I have...
You toss one over my way so
it's up here. Hold on, I'll get the actual... Ross Marigold was a very, very famous... Shit, that's a long ways up there.
Gary?
I don't even think Gary can get it.
That will stand on that.
It's going to collapse right underneath me.
It's going to go down.
Hi-ya! We'll give you a little history lesson here. So there's a ram caddis. This was from the Pasadena Casting Club guys sent me this because Ross Marigold stayed here for a long time, Cabin 8. And so I'll give you let you see it. But,
trying to get
so it. You might have to do.
There we go.
Excuse me.
Perfect.
You got to get the ram and the serendipity. So the serendipity, the ram caddis is always a caddis. But then the serendipity started being tied in different colors and slightly smaller and became a very famous midge imitation and cross-dressing for a caddis as well. And if you fish it, and you know, it's lost its way here. It's completely, it used to be it in the form of the serendipity. The serendipity went morphed through many changes. Craig Matthews changed it a little bit in the serendipity and put a different body on it. This was a camel on his. It was twisted. And then Craig did it, and he put a little hair head on it. And then Nick Nicholas did the three dip, and that was just thread with the little head. Incredible midge pattern, right? But done in the right color, because we used to do the three dips, the original serendipity with the twisted body. We used to do those in green. It's like any color you made the body, because its hair head and its hind end hanging down, made it a great pupating caddis of any color, of any size, of any shape, right? And so then the three dip shows up after Nick did it, and it was just very sparse. Absolutely the best number one fly in this river for decades. And it was like, it was just something as common as a hare's ear or a pheasant tail back then. And so, and then it's one of my bitches about the Perdigon revolution. It got overshadowed by, and then it had to have a bead head. Well, that's so counterintuitive to the damn fly, because if the fly rides, it's pupating and it's coming up and it's, or, you know, it's just coming up and its head's going to pop out and be in the film. Kind of back to that thing I was pissed about in the bighorn. What an incredible thing to understand and try to mimic, right? And lose the freaking bobber. Right. They're coming to the surface, right? But we're never going to get past that. And then the beadhead thing came along, and then all of a sudden, in my serendipity, by the way, the three dip that we did just had two crystal flashes. It's the only thing I put on it. It's still Nick's fly. It's just my version of it had two crystal flashes. And light, if there's light, I fish better. Without, I go back to his, right? And it was just always good. So yes, you should have it, but you should. But if you're talking about the original serendipity, what we would call the original serendipity, which is nowhere, nothing like the original one that Ross Marigold did, but the one that Craig Matthews kind of popularized with the twisted body, a little bit bigger, and then the crystal dip. Oh my God, the crystal dip was the greatest caddis in crystal, not in green. And it's just, when a caddis pupates and it goes to the surface, it's forcing gas, this gaseous bubble into its ectoskeleton. The sun hits it, and it reflects very chromy, right? And so it was just such a phenomenal, and it truly went from being a 1,000 dozen a year pattern to 20. And it's all because of the Perdigon.
Yeah.
It just, everybody went to that style and Euro trashing or tight lining or, you know, bobbering it, and they just lost their way. That was something that was kind of fun when we were on the Bighorn with Doc and Mike. Mike really didn't really get it, how to rig them. Doc had no idea what we were doing.
Perdigons?
He'd never heard of one.
Oh, yeah. No, he didn't know.
No idea.
Yeah, Mike goes, should I put split shot?
Yeah.
On? This is Mike Craig.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, that's what you do over there. You split shot, you know, and you did it. And now you got, and it's like, God, it was refreshing as hell. Compared to when I show it to somebody here and some kid and they, you know, 25 or something, and he's, where's the bead? Well, it doesn't have a bead. Huh. Got any of those in the Perdigon? No, and, you know, counter, and it was, and I have no problem with fishing this style. I don't. I do it myself. But you completely miss the fact of where, why you have two flies, and you miss the fact that some are going up and the fun of chasing that window.
So in reference to this, SF395 is oddly enough the next question I was going to ask. He says, I'm that guy that asks where's the bead on all my nymphs. Typically using tungsten to get down as quickly as possible, could you please explain the benefits of using a beadless nymph or even brass beads in different situations and how to present each properly? Thanks.
Well, we just did, really. It's the point of nymph fishing, not anymore. It's gone away. And you've got to argue in defense of the Pertagon. It fishes.
Yeah, great. It works really well.
It just fishes great. And you, but understand how, it's as simple as this. Bugs start on the bottom and they ascend to the top of the water, right?
They got to get
there
somehow.
And they have to get there. They got to get there somehow. And there's going to be a point in their emergence where the fish are following them up. And so the fun of that, of understanding a pupation or an emergence and what the bug starts to morph into another bug, and it's happening as they're going up and their bodies are changing and you're building these gaseous bubbles into them, rather it's the thorax of the mayfly or it's the entire body of a pupating caddis or it's a midge. Regardless, they were doing this. And so you run two flies, you would always run a fly low and then you would stagger this one up. If you could run three, and if you can't run three, you know, you could do all three stages. If you're only running two, some people thought two was sacrilegious. I mean, back in the day, that was like, that's bullshit, right? Because that's back in the wet fly days when you would kind of swing your fly up and pick it up and let it ascend through the water. This is, you know, things change. And so the reason you do it and why you would have a bead low, I was equally as anti-bead as I pretend I am with Pertagons. Because I spent my whole life understanding what the bug looks like and how it swims to the surface, as opposed to is it an active swimmer? Is it a drifter? You know, how does it get to the top? You design your fly around that. And now you got two freaking shiny gooey things, right? And it's like in the middle, and we've lost that desire to understand what they truly look like, mm-hmm. simply because the other one outfishes, but it's kind of irritating. But it still should have two and two zones. Right. And so you got your Pertagon down here, whatever your bead head is. And ideally, you would have had one above that that had nothing on it, you know, so it would stay above those flies. And you fish two flies to fish two zones for that reason. You don't fish two flies just to lose more to make me more money. I like that part, but that's not why you do it. Right. Like when people used to run their weight above all their flies. Generally, when you lose one, you lose two. That's great for Kelly. You know, Pertagons, you don't lose many. I mean, they just tick, tick. You're never really dragging. But the reason you run them, what was his name? Craig?
It didn't give us a name, I don't think.
What did you say? Yeah.
SF.
SF. SF. Well, the reason you're doing it, and what? So it's very simple. I mean, one's lower. It's not heavier. It just starts here and has to get to here. And so your flies, you can do it by doing a lysering lift at the end of your drift and picking the flies up to tell you if they're above you. There's a million ways to do it, but you're running those staggered. For those of you who aren't watching, I have my hands flying around in front of me. One's higher over my head, one's below it. And so you just have your flies in different zones because you're anticipating that PMD is getting its way to the top, and you're now using a emergent fly as opposed to, and what, you know, which in reality, if a bead was going to have any purpose in life, it would be right at that last 12 inches where they actually get shiny and then they go up. But the one on the bottom should be absolutely no bueno, but they eat the shit out of them. So what? How do you argue this? Because but they eat the shit out of night crawlers too.
Here's the answers. They have very small brains.
Yeah, but why do you want to have a smaller brain by not trying to figure it out? You know what I mean?
That's a great question.
Expand yourself. Don't be like me. Be like Jerry.
Jerry just gave such a funny look from that other room. Cocked his head sideways. Look at
Mike Craig, when Mike and Craig and I got over there, he told Doc that we didn't need, he was trying to get out, you know, something about the internet. And he goes, you don't need it. All you got, you don't need Google here. Just ask Jerry or Kelly. They'll tell you.
These guys have a lot of answers. A lot of good stories, too. It was cool for me to be kind of just around your guys' friend group and hear all the reminiscing stuff of some pretty funny stories that probably can't be told on the podcast. But all right, next question comes from Trout Sniffer 20.
Trout Sniffer.
Trout Sniffer, that's a good name. That's like right up that there. One. It might be Mount Rushmore
that's top names we've heard so far.
What was that other one that you really liked? It's like 2 months ago now.
Yeah. I don't remember. And I called it out because it was like, that was another
it was good.
Trout Sniffer, though.
Trout Sniffer's
good. We should write those down and have an award for at the end.
Trout Sniffer, leader in the clubhouse.
I don't know. We got to go back to the other cat.
Yeah.
And see what it is, because then we could start a list and we could have some giveaway for it.
What was it? If we liked your name, comment again.
Yeah.
That way,
otherwise, you got to go back and listen to him.
Oh, my Lord. All right. He says, can we get a hopper fishing pod? Best time of year is upon us. Mm. Let's talk hoppers.
True story. Hoppers.
I would say I know Kelly pretty well. I think Kelly likes ants better than hoppers, but they're fished around the same time of the year.
Well, the same time, I just, my favorite dry fly eat in the world is an ant eat, because it's got such a slow, deliberate, if you do it well, when you get a splashy dry, you can't count when you have flight ants hitting the water, because they go batshit crazy. And they'll slash at those. But when you get a true Annie, it is so slow and deliberate. You know you've won. It is like, you know you win. And they don't always eat hoppers. And I don't care where you are. They don't always, but the ant is the first thing to crawl out and the last thing to go home. And they're around. It is every great dry fly fisherman I know's secret weapon.
Yeah.
And in particular, little ones. Which they're virtually impossible.
The beetle.
Well, the beetle's right up there. The beetle is, to me, is
little MFC beetles we sell. That's my, if I can't buy one on anything and I go through all my ants.
I put beetles right with ants.
Yeah.
And that deliberation of eat and it's just the perfection of a dry fly eat. It's just always the same, right? But they're not as fun to fish as a hopper is. But if you fish hoppers strictly dead drift, then they think they are. They're a little more foul proof in some ways. That, you know, especially on this river. I mean,
hoppers are more foul proof.
Yeah, I mean, you can. Yeah, they're so foamy and shit now.
You get a ride.
Can't sink them, and you can twitch them up and downstream skate them, and you really should if you in the hopper if you want a hopper. 404, start moving your damn hoppers. Just twitch a hopper downstream. And to do that, you have to mend your line down below your fly. So
mend.
If you're going to throw a hook cast, if you're on the left bank and you're fishing, you know, hook your fly up and get your line below it and just little tiny micro twitches through your line and make the hopper move. But then let it stop. You know, pop, 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 stop. Give it a long ways. Pop, pop, stop, let it go. It's really active. It's really fun. But, you know, when they get on a hopper bite, there's not much more.
It rocks. It is. You get good fish eating them. I mean, it's similar, you know, to salmon flies and that.
One thing about this that I get asked 100 times a year or more, is it hopper season? And I'm just going to give you my 2 cents worth on this, because I'm the faux male. What was it? What that jackass? Faux male something. But anyway, I'm not over being pissed some
faux
a week
alpha
ago.
Alpha male.
Yeah. What the OAM says, FAO, that's going to be my acronym. I'm going to have it tattooed. What a dickweed. But anyway, if you, I get asked, is it hopper season? And they're always amazed in July, and they say, I saw a hopper. Well, we start getting hoppers in May.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had ants up. You go out on a snowstorm. You go out in the winter, you know, in the spring, and the midges are crawling around. You wait around too long, you're going to see an ant crawling around right beside it, right? They're there. And my 2 cents worth for you, because I get asked so much about this, is it it's not really that it's hopper season. It's when you think about when you start fishing terrestrials, you've lost all of your mayflies and caddis for the daytime for the most part. You might have trichos in the morning in some places not. But as the day goes on and you're fishing, you've lost all your waterborne insects. And what the trout do is they move over to the edges looking for landborne insects coming in. It's not that there's a season. It's not that they just showed up. And by the way, windy days aren't great for hot. I'll get a lot of hate mail on that one. Grasshoppers don't fly and get thrown in the river in windy days. It's a very big misconception in my mind. They have claspers, they lock in, and you don't see them. You see them on that barely windy days and that gust, you know, it's occasional and stuff when they're flying around and doing their shit. And then, but you get them really windy days, you go, oh, it's going to be a great hopper day. I've never had a great windy hopper day. One exception, if you can get an can't remember who I was with. I'm on the stone down by Pig Pen, way down low, and they are mowing, they are cutting, and it's windy.
The fields, by the way, cutting fields.
They're thrashing hay. And it is like, holy shitville. It's blowing like shit. Well, anybody clasping on, they're getting flailed out. I mean to tell you, there was 1,000 hoppers on the river, and there was 5,000 fish trying to eat them. I never seen anything like it in my life.
Pretty cool.
But I've never been, I don't know how close he was on that one pass. Didn't seem to matter because it went on, it probably 20 yards from the river. And we got a 30-mile-an-hour wind, and every piece of blade of grass and hopper in the world was hitting the water. So that would be an exception. But for the most part, really windy days don't really cut it for me. And I much prefer, and they fly more, and there's more bugs on the water. I just don't think they fly as much when it's like that. But the hopper season is basically when all your day bugs are gone. And it's not the fact that it's a season so much, it's just that the fish they edge out more looking for that land-based bug. And then if I can get the right river, I have a lot of confidence certain days with hoppers, but if it wanes even a little bit, I immediately go to a beetle or an ant. Frequently too.
Yeah.
I frequently run a beetle above my ant, and it's just golden.
So two questions for you. One, what type of water do you look at when you're fishing hoppers? Because I see a lot of guides on the Madison specifically run hoppers down the middle, which you'd think it would be more of a banked out thing, given that they're a land bug and, you know, banks are land and the middle is not. Second question, fly selection.
The first one would be in the water. I prefer edging, but the center's money. This is a bell curve river.
Yep.
You know, it comes down, you got a
shaped like a W.
Yeah, it's a hump. And so you get fish in the middle just searching. They're still searching. They're searching, and you know, there's a lot of landborne insects that hit on the water besides hoppers and beetles and ants. But and so I prefer mostly, and I do that center shot because I think it's cool. Especially if I can run the edges that I can see. But there's just something fun about running a bank. There's something really
target
fun
practice,
about target practice, fishing 5 inches of water that are 5 inches tall on their back.
Yeah.
It's just magical, right? And so
might have a fin poking out.
Yeah, if you're looking close enough. Particularly, I mean, but the water on this river, but it just, there's something real, like the beaverhead hopper fishing, running under grass banks, when it's hanging over and you go under it, there's nothing cooler than that. I mean, shit. I remember doing it with Craig Smith one time. We filmed a show, and he said, bring the biggest hoppers you can find. We had 3.5-inch hoppers, and they ate the living shit.
Bigger than a salmon fly.
Way bigger. It was ridiculous. And so,
what's the biggest hopper you've ever seen, like natural?
Probably 3 inches. I mean, that one that blew up on my truck the other day was closing in.
That thing was huge. A giant. Yeah, Jerry spotted that thing. it's like a 2-inch wing.
You know, and then I would encourage people to One, old is cool. The old Dave's Hopper, Gartside's Hopper, some of those, they still fish. Don't give it a try.
Doesn't have to be foam.
But you don't, they're not foam. You have to fish them. You can't, you have to be able to fish an old school fly. Any idiot can throw foam and not drown it for a half hour. Even foam, though, can be sunk later, sooner than later.
River, it sinks.
Yeah. Well, you just saturate it because you drag some, but can't leave anything underwater too long. But I really dig active hopper fishing. I like to target banks because it's like you said, target practice. It's fun to set the fly, see if you can do it. Fun to twitch one out and have a fish come chase it. That's pretty wild. But that's cool, but I really prefer to throw an ant and see that. If I can see my selection on flies, all the new hoppers, all that new foam stuff is so good. And some of them are, geez, you see those ones KK's doing at Montana Fly? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, they might as well be a real one. They are so perfect.
Do we have those?
Not yet. Okay. We will. Well, I think we do have some.
We've got a bunch of cool new hopper patterns.
No, we do have some.
I don't know
any
names. They're cool.
I just can't remember the name. We'll look it up and post it because it's really cool.
We've got a new wasp pattern.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Wasp, you've seen my wasp. I fish a ton of wasp patterns. There was Andy Burke did a sunk wasp that was absolutely money. And I do a lot of wasp patterns, I think. And that's one that they'll... The one thing I used to see back in Michigan is they would jump on them. They would do a belly flopper on them. I'm not shitting you. They'd jump up and poof, land right on top of them.
Why?
Sink them. Go looking. Huh. I don't know if what. I just, there's no other bug. There sure was. When Guy Turk came out with the Power Ant back in the 80s, late 80s, 90s sometime. Yeah, big rubber legs and a big red ant or black ant. I mean, they would belly flopper that one too. But if you just sit there and wait, they'll find it.
Weird.
They're coming around and get, if you didn't snag them in the ass by going, shit, you know? But they would do that. But my favorite hopper, I love the Gartside hopper. I just think it's sexy as hell. But all the foam ones, like Johnny hated that Blade Runner. I loved that fly. That was a running.
I throw that on a spay rod and skate it like a true, like a dry, like a steelhead skate across the water. Not twitch or anything. A true skate, and that's my best pattern in terms of actually keeping its head above water and working its way across. And
pretty sure that's what Mel got her 26 on down there.
Yeah. Yeah, Johnny hated that. He got rid of it. We don't sell it anymore.
Well, Johnny makes all the rules.
Yeah, you know, angry.
I used to make the rules.
Yeah, until Johnny showed
angry
up.
Angry elf. But most of the foam stuff, I'm trying to think of one in particular, they're just all... The
Thunder Thighs is a staple.
Thunder Thighs was money, still is.
So in terms of like the... I look at hoppers and we may have talked about this already, but I look at hoppers like streamers, right? You've got your different colors. You got your tan, your pink, your yellow, maybe your green.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a dark
How
one
many
in there
green
too.
Leaf hoppers did we see over on the Bighorn?
Oh, like four?
Yeah.
That was more than any other kind of hopper we saw.
More than any bug we saw.
Yeah, more than any bug we saw.
And they were bright green.
Lime mm-hmm. green, yeah. Yes. So you've got your different colors, and then you need different sizes and then different profiles. So... hoppers can get pretty big down into the single digits, or you can run them up into 14s. I mean, there's some really small hoppers out there. And then, you've got solid body hoppers with rubber legs. You've got the Thunder Thighs that has foam legs that kick out sideways and kind of different profiles.
Kickers. Great ones to twitch.
You know what Chuck's been doing?
Hmm.
Probably shouldn't say this. It's a secret. Sorry, Chuck. Well, it didn't work. It'd be a great secret if it worked, but he's been ripping one leg off. Fishing like a cripple hopper. One of these days it might work. Maybe it'll be the next new thing. Might spin a little in the air.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have. I'm going to tell you a quick story about a guy back in Michigan. He's an old dude that come in my shop every spring. When you're thinking
the Troutsman.
Yeah. And he would come in at 11 o'clock, almost. It was opening day. And every year he'd come in, he'd buy 6 Joe's hoppers, which is really old school. Hackle up front, it's got quill wings on the side. It's really old school. Yellow body with brown hackle through it, red tail.
Oh,
just,
yeah. Classic.
Just a really classic hopper, right? Every year, for like 6 years straight, come in, and he had this old, not old, brand new, burgundy Buick. Don't remember which one it was, but it's a big one. And he would come in, he'd wind around, very polite man, and he'd buy his six Joes, and he'd say, see you next year, and off he'd go. And one year he came in, and there's 18 inches of snow on the ground, right? And it had snowed that night. And the opening day is third Saturday in May, April. And he comes in, and he buys his, it's 11 o'clock, and it's warm. It's like 35, 40 now.
Yeah, really
and,
warm.
But there's snow on all the banks of the rivers.
Yeah.
And he said to me, or I said to him, you're not going to go out and throw them hoppers a day, are you? He goes, oh, no, no. I don't buy the fly. He says, I've gotten older and I only fish opener. It's just a tradition, you know. He said, I go and I come in here and I buy these six flies for next year. And that keeps me thinking for next year, right? Now that's pretty cool. I says, and then I started thinking about it and he inferred that he was already done fishing. And I said, you're fishing these out there today? And he says, yep. How'd you do? And he says, you want to see? He's a limit keeper, right? We went to his, and he's fishing the Boardman. We went to his Buick, and he opened his trunk, and he's got his creel. He's got five fish in it. The biggest one's probably 22, which is a massive fish for that river. He's got a couple, 14, 16, and 18 in there. And I says, you're throwing those hoppers now? And he goes, son, trout don't know it's winter. No, trout don't know there's no hoppers just because it's winter.
That's awesome.
And I go, and I looked at his rig. He had a Mitchell 300. He had a Spiroflex spinning rod. And he had 8-pound Royal Bonnell on that 300 Mitchell. And he had a Joe's hopper. And about 18 inches above it, he had three split shot. And they were number sevens. He was slow rolling the bottom of that river in April with water temperatures in the maybe early 40s and has a creel full of trout that any fly guy on earth would sell his soul to have.
Yeah, for sure.
And son, so trout don't know there's no coppers.
That's so funny.
So you can sink your hopper. It's what I was getting at.
Yeah, the sunk hopper.
A sunk hopper is money, especially in the middle. It's incredible. And, you know, don't be afraid to run a dry dropper with a sunk hopper on it. Joe's hopper's a great sunk hopper. Just goo it up. Just spit on it and make it sink, right? Doesn't have to be deep, although that guy was throwing three number seven shot and slow roll them down the middle, the Boardman.
I would say on that note, sunk ants are great too. I remember hearing this line from Jeremy, and I said it to everybody in the shop because I went out and did it and worked once. And I told everyone, and if Jeremy says it, it's probably true, your antacid, the yellow one in particular, not the high vis, but, you know, he told me to do this. I did it, it worked. I told everyone else, fish it till it sinks, then keep fishing it. They'll eat it sunk just as well. Sometimes
I run a
better.
Double sunk always. And I run, if you look at my terrestrial box, there's, and I run this super old, well, and I have a whole, I even have a freaking, that's a bastardized thing. I have a jig, Perdigon style sunk ant over there.
Oh yeah.
You know, but I prefer if you go back, and I don't know if it's anybody's, it's probably Ed Shanks. I don't know for sure. He was a legendary trout man, but it was, I don't know who did it, but it's just a thread ant. I just do an abdomen, and I generally run them in 12s and 14s only.
Yeah,
I don't. I do a few of those micro blacks, you know, but not so much. And I'll run it underneath. A lot of times, run them double sunk, but I'll run them underneath an antacid, or underneath a beetle, or whatever it is. Not, you know, maybe 10 inches back, and so behind anything.
Yeah.
But I particularly like to do, and a thread ant has no weight, right? You just thread. You build up your abdomen, and you build it up, and I put two turns of hackle on it, whatever color the predominant color is. If it's a dark brown, it's a brown hackle. If it's a black ant, it's black. And then you tie off your hackle, move forward, and make another bump, you know. And I dip the whole damn thing in lacquer. Yeah. The whole thing, hackle and all. Pull it out, take a paper towel, wipe off the hackle, whatever comes off, and I set them over there and dry.
Yep.
And their legs are all, they're all greasy, look awful. And they hardly ever break off. You'd think they'd break because they're lacquered. They mm-hmm. don't. They just bend at the thing, and they just look god-awful. And it's still my number one ant. It's just thread. I usually two-tone them. Got like a brownish-red back. Not red so much, more brownish. And then maybe a dark brown up front or black. Mm. Absolute killer on this river. And then, I know, it can't have too big, though. That's where I'm running the 14s behind a traditional. If I can get away with doing a single ant, I do.
Yeah.
Because it's, to me, it's, the double thing is, you know, it's almost like a hope thing. It's almost like, well, I got two flies on, maybe I'll get, I hate to say maybe. You know, I want to go, in particular with ants, it's one of those things where it's my favorite, and I don't really want to just make it a number. I want to see that, the deliberation of that eat that is so classic to an ant. So I'll fish them usually alone.
Yeah.
But way often have a sunk ant behind a hopper.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny to watch your hopper suddenly go backwards. It's like, oh, don't think that was me. But yeah, it's an ants are there's a lot of cool ants now. That what's that? Pav ant? What's that guy? That little cinnamon pav? Oh,
the
pav?
Cinnamon toast guy. Pavs?
Pavs, I think. Pavs, that's a badass looking thing. Again, it's foam. I hate that. I there's certain times when I just want to fish like you. That one's just indestructible. Fat Angie, that's a
net pav, little one. Cinnamon toast sliding
there. Yeah, that thing's badass. Yeah. That thing's sweet. I like that one. The cinnamon, the antacid, I mean, that cinnamon brown cinnamon. We used to have a picture of that around here somewhere. The original one. I've seen very few ants that can outfish that thing tied right. Then I would encourage you to watch that video on how to do it and tie your own because it's a super simple fly. Don't think the rubber legs make it any better, but put them on it because people like them. The original one did not have rubber legs on it, and they ate the living shit out of it. But, and I would encourage you to throw it, go out without your cocaine attitude and just go fish slow and just fish really tight to the banks. And
that's a lot easier said than done.
It really is. But
you have to master the zen nature of fly fishing.
And if you've got a river you can be in and fish to the shore and you can fish downstream to them, money.
Well, it's like Danny Morrell talking about a cutthroat stream he fishes where he brings his dogs with him and he fishes downstream.
Yeah.
Jump. Kicks all the hoppers and ants in the water.
Yeah, well, you can do, I've watched people do that. I've seen people do that with hatches. Randy Brown talked about shaking them off in that one pot on the when he wrote that we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
It,
when yeah,
he,
yeah.
Shaking the trees.
Oh shit!
We used to do that all the time.
We tried that after listening to Randy Brown's article. We went down to the
South. Yeah, it's not like it's his second day on the river or anything.
No. After he said it was okay, we Chris, Jack, and I were on the South Fork and. We hit the salmon fly hatch perfectly. I mean, I've never seen so many salmon flies. And we pulled over in a tree. I think Chris has a video or something. I shook like, I don't know, 200 bugs out of this tree. Well, they only made it about 20 feet down the bank before they crawled right back out. We didn't get a fish on the entire bank.
They got to go. They got to go out.
Yeah.
If they don't fly back to shore.
Yeah. No, they. Didn't go good.
I got to tell you, I've watched people chum with hoppers.
Oh yeah. It works.
I got to tell you, I know people that used to drive down the road with a butterfly net out the side to get hands full of them.
Just do that?
Well, yeah, when you get there.
Yeah. All right.
But if you do it right at certain times, and you know, you got to be dirt road that you can get in the grass, oh, you can fill a bag full in no time. And then chumming. Jerry and I used to fish grasshoppers all the time.
Was it you who was doing this?
Yes. I invented it.
Yeah, I used to know somebody who was doing it.
I made it for my bike when I was a kid because there's nothing funner than running grasshoppers and creeks, right?
Yeah.
And I made this thing that stuck out the side of my bike And I had this, I don't even remember how I got it on it, bent the pipe and it came over like this. And I was riding, it had these two little nets. And I was going, I didn't go 100 feet and hit it like a stump or something that's in there, flip my ass head over hands out of the handlebars. So that's when we decided we'd do it double. Steve Burkholder and I, and we'd go through that. We'd get at his uncle's house, it's on a hill, and we'd drive this bicycle down and just trying to make as much, and this both held, the guy in the back held the net. And it was pretty effective. We got a lot of grass. Otherwise, you got to go out and you're jumping on them and shit, right? Trying to catch them and nothing better.
They are
a sunk, live sunk ant kicking ain't making it far. Not that I would encourage you to do that on the Madison River.
No, don't. Please. All right. What do you got behind the desk?
Oh, man. Are we already done already?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crap. I just kicked it. Let's see. What's new behind the desk today? Stay bunky. Jerry's new over there. Jerry's been watching.
Jerry's a nice addition. Hey, Jerry. What's up?
I already showed this book, but I got to do this again because I'm sorry. I forgot. I did a... This isn't new, but I've got to do this on the next one because we didn't put the right where to get this.
Oh, we didn't?
This is the IFF, or the, and I had that wrong. It's FFI.
Not FFFFI.
It started out FFF, then it was IFFFF, now it's FFFI and FFI. And so I apologize for that. I'm out of the loop. But there was the, damn it. I have to go get it, and we'll do that one on the next one.
We'll do that.
What's new behind the
next
bench?
Week.
Oh,
the yeah, net. That.
The net.
This is the greatest Freudian fall of all time.
The net, and where's the other thing? Where'd he go?
I think it's over there. I don't remember where.
Anyway.
Somewhere else.
This customer stopped. There's a guy coming down the hill. There's a semi, and I can hear him. He's hauling a excavator or something.
It's
on
big,
this
big forklift.
Was that what it was?
Yeah.
And I hear it, and I look out my window, and I go, oh, shit, that guy's losing the wheel. I don't think he knows it. I can hear it. I can hear it banging, and I can see it up from the house, which is 400 yards away. And I'm like, oh, no. And I can bang, 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 bang. And I'm like, oh, crap, that guy's broke down. And so he pulls in the driveway, and here's this semi right in the middle of the driveway, in the middle, like a Friday or something. Like, oh, shit, right?
You know, with the Siri, you can't park here.
Huh? No, I felt terrible for this guy, right? And so he's in here and he comes in. And he goes, hey, man, is it okay? But it's just, oh, I heard you shuck that wheel. What a drag. Because, I mean, you just don't pull this off and make a new one, right?
No.
He's got to get everything off this trailer. Somebody's got to come pull it. Shuck it. It just wrecked everything, right? And I felt terrible for this guy. And he says, man, it's all right to leave that there. I says, well, hell yeah. It's not like you can move it. Where are you going to take it, right?
Whether he goes, all right or not,
and
it's
says,
there.
I'm so sorry. He says, I'm so sorry. And I think he told me his name. Maybe not. And I said, what a drag. You know, it's Friday, I think. You know, your weekend shot. And it's like, wow, it sucks for this guy. I said, yeah, it's perfect right there. Anybody pulls in, they can drive around. It's not blocking anything. And you go, great. He goes, you know, I ordered a new rod and reel from you guys. And I just thought, and I was driving to Idaho. And he said, I thought, I'll just drive down and grab it real quick. And I said, what? He says, yeah. He says, oh, well, of course you can leave as long as you want.
Yeah,
right?
I didn't
care anyway. But he gave me this net. I wasn't here to get it. And it's just a super cool net. And he left that and something else, an old rod, I think it was a South Bend glass 8-weight, which is cool because he knows I like glass.
Yeah.
And, he left me this. It was really
a very above and beyond. Thing to do. Yeah.
You know what this guy doesn't do? Doesn't leave his fucking cart.
There's no chance. This is a good person.
This guy doesn't leave his cart out for you to have a learning session from.
All right, so band of the week. Wrap up. What you got?
Taj Mahal.
I'm going with drug dealer.
Drug dealer. By the way, this was a fake. I had a beer in there the whole time.
He wouldn't let me drink one.
He wanted one. He couldn't have one.
Can't always
Thank
get
you,
what
everybody.
You want.
What a blast. Got any questions? Feel free to call.